Hello, everyone. This is my second opportunity to speak with Jody Mountain, and I met Jody, I guess, a couple of months ago. She is a massage therapist, but really she is the master of an ancient Hawaiian spiritual path that I will let her tell you more about. But I just wanted to say that in the couple of months that I've been aware of Jody's work, I have felt deeply moved by what it is that she's sharing. As I said in my last interview with her, I felt, as I was reading some of her writing, a deep inner resonance with this work that was very mysterious and went way beyond even the meaning of the pieces that I was reading, but it's led me to be deeply intrigued. In fact, so intrigued that I'm intending to join Jody for a six-day retreat in March, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that later. But right now, I really want to give Jody the opportunity to introduce herself, particularly for those of you who might not have listened to our last interview and may not know anything about the kind of work that she does. And so, Jody, thanks so much for joining me again.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me. It's a great pleasure to talk to you again.
Great. And could you, for the benefit of people who might not know you and may not have heard the last interview that we did, would you just say a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I come from a dance and movement background. I was born in Jamaica and studied dance, the Jamaican folk dance, from the age of four. And so I've been always very kind of body-oriented. I went through college in Canada and then was choreographing for theater in Toronto and starting to get very attracted to the body. Just, you know, dancers are always sore and we're always squeezing each other, and people started offering me money to squeeze them. So, you know, $15 an hour for a starving artist was like, wow, okay, I'll do that. And then as I was doing that, I was getting very fascinated by the body. And so I was about to look into massage school, and I happened upon a student of a kahuna who lived on Kauai at the time, Kahu Abraham Kava'i. And he was giving demonstrations and workshops in the area. And I went to the demonstration, and it was one of those pivotal moments in my life where my jaw just hit the ground. And I just really, maybe similar to you, Jeff, experiencing some of the work, I just felt this deep resonance and just knew what this guy was saying was true. I just knew it in every cell of my body. I couldn't, you know, I had visceral reaction to it and dropped everything I was doing and embarked on this path of taking these immersive workshops in the work. And eventually ended up moving to Hawaii and eventually ended up studying with a kahuna himself. And that became yet another pivotal moment in that Kahu was carrying a transmission that was not coming through that particular student. And so, again, there was a huge... So studying with Kahu, the work came out of the realm of body work. It came out of the realm of helping somebody else feel better. It came out of the realm of helping to heal another person. And it came into the realm of my own transformation and my own direct connection to spirit through the body. So the body work is more or less, as I practice it and as I teach it, it's more or less a byproduct of the actual work itself.
Can you just describe a little what kahuna is? That is the name of the work?
No, kahuna is a Hawaiian word, and it means keeper of the secrets.
Mm-hmm.
It means expert in a certain field. So kind of the masters, the priests of the society, but not just in terms of spirituality. So because the ancient Hawaiians saw spirit in everything, you would have kahuna, you could be a kahuna of architecture, you could be a kahuna la'au lapa'au, which is a kahuna who knows about the plants.
Mm-hmm.
You could be any kahuna of fishing, a kahuna lomi lomi. So you can be, you know, everything was part of the society, all these different aspects. Everybody was absorbing and transmitting, you know, all different aspects. But if you were a kahuna, you would have come into the experience and knowing of all the different kauna. Kauna is another Hawaiian word that means level of being or level of perception. All the different kauna of that particular art. So the family member who might know lomi lomi because it was pretty prevalent in the ancient societies would let maybe lomi lomi their baby in the tide pools. They would, you know, anyone who's hurting, they just start to lomi lomi them. Lomi lomi just means to massage. It's just the Hawaiian word for massage. So, but the kahuna lomi lomi would then know these deeper aspects of the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and ancestral aspects of this particular, how it's manifesting in this particular being in this particular moment. And so they would, kahuna would be like, they would contain all the levels of spiritual mastery of whatever task, whatever area that they were experts in.
Interesting. I love that expression of they've mastered all the levels of perception, I think you said. And I've studied some of the 20th century German philosopher Heidegger, and he spoke a lot about mastery. And if, you know, I know that term has a lot of baggage to it, but his description of how when you become masterful with something, or as you said, an expert, it's not just that you have sort of mastered the skills, but to use his language, in that domain, the world opens up to you so that you see with a depth of sensitivity and subtlety and richness that allows you to see layers of reality that are just invisible to most people.
Beautiful. Yeah, and that term mastery that we've come to here in the Western mind, to me, there's a finality to it. Oh, I'm a master. Now that's I know all about it. But it's really kind of similar to that quote or that that idea that you just offered. To me, it's more like an opening. It's an opening of perception into those different areas. So it's infinitely revealing itself. But it's just, I guess, the possibility that has been shown that these avenues are even available to perceive in this particular situation or instance.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so you studied in Hawaii?
Yeah, I studied with him. And so these immersive workshops. So he only taught in really in 14-day or more immersions of the work. So you had to go and stay at his house for that period of time. So it was very unlike Western learning. It was more of an experiential experience. So Western learning is when Western learning is more like I tell you an idea as the teacher, let's say. I tell you an idea, you understand the idea or you attempt to understand it, and you go, don't quite understand that. Let me see if I can really, really get a grip on that. And I like to use sometimes the example of we are all one. So supposing your spiritual teacher says, you know, actually we're all one being. And so we take that into our mind and we go, yes, but you're over there and I'm over here. How is that really true? And then maybe you go along in your life and you start to see similarities between more and more similarities between you and other people. Like, actually human beings, we're more similar than we are different, aren't we? And we're starting to have that. So we start to understand and go, I kind of get it. And then we might have a meditative experience. And we go, I understand it. And then once we understand it as Westerners, this is just generally, maybe not particularly for you, we then start to try and embody it and start to put it into action. Mm. But that's the root. So we go through the mind, the understanding, and then the embodiment. And the indigenous learning, which is what Kahu did with us, is through the body first. And he would always say that the body gets it first and the mind catches up later. So the, you know, as one entity, as one being, the human being has all kinds of intricate, interconnections between the mind, the thoughts, the emotions, the body, the memories, the hopes, the dreams, the images that you're seeing right now, the shapes, the colors, the sensation under your feet. All this is informing your experience right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we are actually more, I don't know if I said this in the last interview, we're more cellular processes than we are ideas and thoughts and memories.
Right.
Anything going on in our head. We're actually 99% more just flesh and blood and more importantly, the spark of life that is moving all that through us.
Right.
So while
right.
we're in form, this is inseparable. The spark of life, the spirit that we are, this part of us that is deeply connected to every form of life, tangible and intangible, is inseparable from our physical being.
Mm. That's
we can't take it out. We can imagine that it's out. We can experience or feel or have, you know, visions in our experience, but actually you can't remove it and have it, you know, it's not a separate part of you. It's still in this, you're still having it in this life, in this experience, in this body.
Right.
So all these things, all these, particularly the mental and emotional processes, have implications or connections in the body. And so when we address those lines of, say, tension or stimulation or sensation, whatever is going on with these particular things in the body, when we address those, when we start to allow them voice, allow them space, what happens is they start to, in a reverse way, clear the mind and clear the consciousness and clear the perception. Because then the actual experience in the body informs the mind. So in other words, we flip the priority from any ideas that we have and ingesting the ideas and digesting the ideas, and we have it come up. We have the life force awaken and inform the mind. So the mind is secondary. The mind is a servant then. The mind becomes a servant to spirit. But where we find spirit is through the body. So I don't know if that is very complex. It's probably maybe a little bit nonsensical even to people, but that is the indigenous worldview. And it does flip our perception of who we are and how we perceive the world completely upside down.
Mm. Well, what it makes me think about is, I'm sure I've had many experiences, but one very striking one, similar to what you said, my teacher, one of his teachings, you know, that I heard very early on in working with him was, he was teaching freedom, and he said, if you want to be free, you have to, have no future.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was one of those things that strikes you when you hear it. And then I spent about a decade going, what does that mean? You know, when he says have no future, what does he mean? You know, and you find various ways to interpret it that you find palatable. And then a year or two later, you get it at a deeper level. And at some point, about 10 years later, it really struck me that it is actually exactly what it is. It means being so rooted in the present that in a very real way, you don't have a future.
Mm-hmm.
And then I experienced the freedom of that. So, but the reason it comes to my mind is because hearing what you just said, I feel like sometimes I have, you know, like with a profound statement like that, heard it, mm-hmm. and then spent a lot of time intellectually trying to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the understanding finally clicks, you know, it's the whole thing seems, as you said, to sort of seep right into my body. There's a sense of relaxation, and the whole thing rushes into my body. And I'm just wondering, having heard you, if that recognition that I would have at the beginning, that I would say was an unconscious recognition, if in fact that's actually a bodily recognition,
mm-hmm.
that I then try to catch up to mentally. And
I think you're really right. I think that most things that are true or that deeply resonate with us, they do they impact us on a visceral level, but we're not really tuned and not brought up and not taught to pay any attention to that. It's just like having an itch or you know, feeling a fly on your back. I mean, we're just taught that. We're basically taught that this is a machine that we have to transport our spirit or transport our consciousness, and that we need to take care of it. As I said in one of my videos, you know, if you eat the right food and you drink lots of water and you get right exercise, then this is going to last you for a good long time, this vehicle. And even in yoga and some of the embodied spiritual traditions, I find that there is this idea that this is my body. And that I am, you know, I am here to take care of it. I can't really speak too crazy deeply to yoga because I've taken it for years, but I haven't really studied it. So please excuse me, any yogis that are listening, if I'm not being completely accurate. But that's my impression from, you know, 20 years of taking yoga. So there's this deep visceral experience in something that you heard. And there's nothing, and I wanted to say, Jeff, there's nothing wrong with this Western way of learning. It's just, and it has probably led to multiple enlightenments and realizations and, you know, profound growth opportunities for people, even in our lives to date. But the problem is that we are so over inundated and oversaturated with that way of being that it has huge repercussions for us personally and for the planet. So if we only have access to a narrow bandwidth of information over what we could have access to, and we're all basing it in the brain, then basically the brain is in charge of the body, and the brain is so it's so full of every experience we've ever had and every belief system that's ever been laid down in seeming concrete, and every idea we have about going forward or about what anything is, that it is very tricky to unwind that. So we're kind of living in this conceptual reality of labeling everything, as you said in your book, and those ideas are there. This labeling and you know, that's the mind's job, is to compartmentalize everything. And it also reflects onto our planet. So we have been kind of led now for a few hundred years at least by the white Western mind. And we're dominated by those ideas of controlling the environment, you know, taking what we can take, using all these logical processes without recognizing the life that is here in everything. And so I guess that's just the same in the training, is that what I ask people to do is to, for a moment, come out of this mind-dominant place that they're in and recognize the life that you are. It's really quite simple, but it's very complex and sometimes very difficult for people who are used to running their lives, and, you know, most of us in the West are, with the logical mind, with the brain, with our past experiences to bolster our current decisions.
Right. And that's, I think, very interesting, because we've been trained to trust a certain variety of logical reason above mm-hmm. all else.
Right.
And if I just use my experience of encountering your work, we met in Hawaii basically because someone recommended you as a massage therapist. And mm-hmm. I mean, I had no indication going in to meet you that you were anything but a massage therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And which, not to say that that's wrong or anything mm-hmm. wrong with that, but I wasn't going to you looking for anything beyond a good massage. And when, you know, when you worked on me and we talked a little bit, something really, I can't exactly describe it, but there was a way, there was a sensitivity with which you were working and a way in which I felt you were sort of gently influencing the energy in my body that I found deeply compelling. And then I was so excited about it when I told my wife she wanted to come and see you as well. And then we had another chance to talk. And it was one of those things that it got inside me so deeply that I kept thinking about it, which is, you know, eventually why I wanted to have do the first interview with you. And mm-hmm. and all along the way, there was a part of my mind that was going, you just had a massage. What are you making a big deal out of it for? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, that's just, there's just that part of your mind that's always kind of being skeptical and critical. And I just kept thinking, but there's something here. I didn't know why I felt mm-hmm. that way, but I didn't doubt it. And then preparing for your interview, I started reading your blog posts. And in that reading, you know, I had these very powerful experiences of just energetic opening and light, a sense of light and energy very strongly. And I feel like the work was somehow communicating to me. And now I'm thinking, talking to you, that somehow my body was recognizing something
mm-hmm.
that, yeah. you know, my mind was skeptical of the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt the message that I was picking up viscerally was undeniable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful, Jeff. And I think that, you know, probably many of your listeners have had experiences similar where something doesn't really make sense, but we just are compelled and we feel to go forward, and it all, you know, opens up and blossoms into a beautiful growth or experience. And it's not to say we don't in the West have moments like that and times like that. It's just the, as you say, the overwhelming tendency is to be with the logical mind, and we're brought up like that. So in the trainings, it asks a lot of people to be willing to not know, to be willing not access even that part of themselves for a time, just to exercise a muscle that has been kind of under-exercised. And I wanted to say, too, this idea that of your body, of the information coming through your body or your body waking up to something is pretty accurate in my experience, because the work is really on one level just life meeting life.
Mm.
And as myself as a practitioner, and what I try, I don't try, but as I put the experience out to my students or participants, is it that the experience is one of accessing our own life force to such a degree that we are allowing that to come to the fore. And then my experience is that when I put my hands on another human being, I'm not really doing anything because I can't possibly, I'm aware, first of all, that I am touching not just a back or a leg or an arm, but actually an entire life. That all of you has been through every single moment, every cell, well, the cells change over, but the consciousness of your body has been with you every moment. You, that foot, that hand has been with you, no matter what trauma you've been through, no matter what bliss you've been through, that being has been there. This tissue has been there. The consciousness in this tissue has been there. And so there's that first thing that I'm aware that I can't possibly know all of those moments and how they impacted you and how they shaped you and how they created your hopes and dreams. So it's really an entire, like, holographic or, you know, multidimensional being that I'm touching, past, present, and future, that is perhaps unknown. So there's that aspect, but also, so I can't possibly do anything to help you really when I see that that's the dimension, those are the dimensions that I'm touching, because my mind can't know those. But the life force in me allows itself to be felt by myself, and then the life force in you kind of wakes up, and this is how I perceive it anyway, and know, and feels that it has been recognized and seen. So I like to use the example of a dog at a party. Sometimes where, you know, everyone's chatting and enjoying dinner and the dog's sitting there with its head on its paws. And then when someone goes over to say hi to the dog, what happens? Pats him on the head and the dog, you know, starts wagging his tail and gets all excited and kind of like. So in a way, it's like that in our body. This life force is there. And the moment we turn to it, the moment we say, hey, I see you. Who are you? You know, what are you doing? And that wakes up, and in that pure life force is, in my experience, well, it's where it all lies. You know, our connection to the infinite, every potential of healing, all the ways in which our particular system wants to express itself to its fullest potential is in that life force, if we allow it to be free. But what we've done is we've taken the mind like a clamp or like a lockdown, and with all of the restrictive ideas and limitations that we have been taught, you're not good at that, you're not supposed to be doing that, polite people don't just speak their mind, or, you know, whatever those are very mild. It can also just be I'm not a worthwhile human being, could have been drilled into us when we were children or before that. So, you know, we come in with these ideas about who we are and what we're allowed to do and how our expression is supposed to be, and that clamps itself down on top of our life force. So basically our life force can come out in whatever openings are allowed, but the rest of the time it has to remain under wraps. And so that's not really the path to our potential. It's the path to fulfilling an idea of who we think we are.
Right. And I'd love to get your response to this notion. I was originally trained in physics and worked as a research engineer and a scientist. So I love science. And I love the scientific method. Mm-hmm. And I'm also, you know, having been a spiritual seeker and now a spiritual teacher, have become more and more acutely aware that there's a phenomenon which is sometimes referred to as scientism, which is distinguished from science. Science itself is a particular way of knowing the world and gaining an understanding of the world, and as we all know, it's incredibly successful in certain domains. Scientism is usually an unconscious attitude, belief, or assumption that only the knowledge that comes through science is ultimately valid. And it's, you know, that's not really the purpose of science. As science was being developed over the hundreds of years, it was never thought to be the only form of knowledge. It was thought to be a particular way of accumulating information that worked really well, particularly for physically observable things. But it's become essentially the ultimate verification of truth. So when someone says something's been scientifically proven, that's code for it's really true. And so, you know, for people like us who are working in domains which, you know, a lot of the kinds of scientific reason, they just don't operate in this domain. I think that's why we would encourage people to allow themselves to not know, because the knowing mind that we have inherited has this inherent preference for a certain kind of scientifically measurable, observable rationality that isn't going to serve us in these more subtle domains.
Absolutely. Of course, which you, I'm sure you're aware of the exception, not the exception, but the expansion of science coming into quantum physics.
Absolutely.
Has offered a new possibility really to mankind to start thinking in different ways, really, when two molecules or particles or whatever they are, quarks or whatever, can be in two places at one time and all that kind of previously nonsensical stuff, that's really puts a lot of, it seems to be that's where science and spirituality are going to meet or are meeting.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, that the introduction of quantum mechanics, you know, was very much a part of, you know, helped push a whole new paradigm, you know, in the early 20th century. And and as it develops, I'm sure we'll continue to. I mean, the majority of culture is, you know, which is interesting, is still operating with a science that's probably 200 years old, because most everyday things don't require quantum mechanics.
Right.
And so we're sort of more, most of us are much more sort of viscerally sensitive to, you know, sort of Newtonian mechanics and older science. But yes, absolutely, the discoveries of the quantum world have been such a dramatic, give such dramatic evidence for a very different worldview.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what I find fascinating, which I'm sure that you've come across, is the ancient people. That, I mean, I'm talking prehistorical ancient people. Any wisdom that I've been a part of or been lucky enough to come into contact with, they knew so much more than our scientists have known and that are now they're now kind of catching up to. The ancient people. So the ancient people knew, for instance, the ancient Hawaiians knew that that the universe was inside of us, like in a very almost physical way. And now, from what I hear, because I haven't done the experiment myself, but from what I hear, the proportion of the Earth to the cosmos and the stars, that amount of space is the same space inside our body in terms of the tiny on a different scale, the nucleus to the different organelles and or the protons to the electrons. It's just that there is more space in our body actually than anything else.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so the ancients would have known that, and now we are knowing it because of our scientific push or scientific experiments that have been done. And back then they just knew it, and how they knew it, I believe, was this way, this path of being, allowing life to show them what's true right now. Mm. If we all stopped and were really just cognizant or paying attention to what is actually true right now, not what I believe is true, not what I think is true, not what I remember is true, we may find a whole another world opening up to us.
Right.
So, I mean, even though I'm looking at the same scene that I wake up to every morning, this is now a new day. There are new droplets of water. There's new energetics that have touched everything in my view. My cells have changed over. I don't know how many. I've lost 1.5 million skin cells since yesterday and regrown them. There is such a lot of new growth, and this moment has never happened before. But because of our ideas of what is, and our sureness about what is, this is a floor, that's a tree, and that's a car. Our sureness of that really limits us to the actuality of what's here right now, the reality of what's here right now.
Absolutely. And you're hitting, I think, the thing that's most exciting to me. You know, I have, and I'm sure you and I would agree here, I have one hesitation about all the excitement around quantum physics and how it is opening up a new world. And mm-hmm. it's basically the hesitation that it's very tempting as quantum physics starts to reveal possibilities that are aligned with a different perception of the world to then use that as evidence. And my hesitation around that is I'm interested in the way of knowing it that the ancients had, or our version of that. And I don't want to inadvertently be reinforcing the kind of scientism I mentioned earlier.
Sure.
By in any way implying that it's true because quantum physics backs it up.
Yeah, I hear you. I do it in reverse, and that's my favorite way to do it. I don't look at quantum physics and then look for the truth. I say, wow, they're catching up to what was already known, and when are they going to catch up to this and this and this and this? I don't know. I don't know if they ever will. But,
right.
I kind of do it backwards, and I get a kick out of reading things in the paper that, you know, they knew millions of years ago or thousands of years ago.
Absolutely, and it is confirming. There is something confirming about it, and I'm glad that, you know, as science progresses, it starts to come upon the same world that ancient mystical wisdom. I mean, it would be really a bummer if they didn't start to converge.
Yeah, but I hear you that, you know, we can't get hung up on, like, they may never come to some of the similar conclusions, and we can't really wait. You know what I mean? We can't wait. We can't get into this cycle of confirmation to believe that it's actually true, because ultimately our experience is what's true, but it's our pure experience. And our experience has been so covered over and limited that we've lost our pure experience. And really that's what this is all about. It's really coming back to indigenous mind, because at the core of all of us, we are all indigenous mind, because we are all just life.
Right.
Apart from having, you know, we can track our ancestry back to indigenous people, all of us. But in the end, right now, we are just life itself, and it's just coming into alignment with that, getting our conscious mind to relax for a moment so that it can see that aspect of ourselves.
Right.
Which is most of ourselves.
Yes. And I think that's when I was, when I got that massage from you, and what I was experiencing, you know, besides the fact that it was a magnificent massage, which it was, but somehow I was feeling like there was some deep communication happening that now, hearing you, I would say was happening sort of like life force to life force. And mm-hmm. and I remember laying there and I was thinking, this could change everything. There was just this sense that I was getting a window into a possibility that, as you were saying earlier, actually was the window into a completely different world. a different world of perception and a different sense of being. And that's what was so compelling about it, that it was an invitation into a world that I felt I hadn't really been a part of, but that I deeply wanted to live in.
Right. Yeah, and I'm not sure, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you know, excuse me, did any of that feel familiar to you, or did it all just feel brand new?
I think that's a very good question. It felt very unfamiliar compared to my ideas about the world.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But it felt very closer than close. It felt very, you know, it felt very at home.
Yeah.
You know, if I didn't compare it to ideas about the world, the experience of it felt like a relaxation into something that felt more familiar than familiar.
Yeah, brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah, I'm so impressed with your sensitivity, Jeff. That's really awesome.
Well, as I told you, you know, after the last community I was in came to an end, I started to feel that there was a new awakening, a different awakening that needed to happen. I mean, I felt very committed. I don't really ever want to live in a place where my deepest awakenings have happened in the past. I always want my biggest awakenings to be in the future.
Right.
And I felt there was an awakening, you know, that I was available for that had to do more with energy and with the body. And so I started experimenting with things and looking into things. And so I think I was very, I wasn't going to you to find that.
Right.
Which might have helped me, because I just went expecting a massage, but somehow I must have been at unconscious levels always open and looking, and then all of a sudden here it was. And so when I saw that you were doing a 6-day retreat, I immediately, you know, I think most people would look at your retreat description and think, you know, that it was a massage therapy training course for massage therapists. But that thought didn't even cross my mind. I assumed it was a spiritual retreat designed, you know, to deepen the kind of awakening and healing that I had already tasted with you.
Right.
And so I could imagine that some people would come onto that description and think, well, I'm not a massage therapist, so it doesn't really apply to me. But for me, I just related to it like it was a spiritual retreat. And I couldn't really be more thrilled to be going. But I'd love for you to tell me, because you said your teacher also only worked in these immersive environments. What is it that you are creating in that environment?
Well, there's a few reasons for that, Jeff, and it's a great question. One of the reasons is that it's really important that individuals come out of their natural environment. That's really important that they come away from their house, from their family, from anybody who has perceived them, perceive them in normal daily life, so that you can have an opportunity to feel yourself in a new way. So, in other words, if we were to do like a daytime course where you'd come, you know, from 9 to 5 and then go home at night and get back on the internet and talk to your family, that would be reinforcing certain ideas about who you are and we'd be starting all over again the next day. In the very beginning, I did 3-day non-residentials just because people were asking me, and I just thought, okay, well, just come for 3 days. And it really is like starting all over again the next day, too, because we're working with foundational ideas about ourselves and about the world. So it's really important that that happen. The trainings that Kahu put me through and mine are quite similar. I've tried to keep them as true to the old ways as possible, or true to the ways that I know, is that, you know, wherever you know that expression, wherever you go, there you are.
Right.
So as you move through this container of the work, you will, what tends to happen is whatever's next for you in terms of whatever part of yourself is holding you back in life, or whatever idea of limitation you have that is, you know, clamped down on your life force, it will come up to the surface, and it'll be magnified. And so you'll get a chance in the moment experientially moving through so whatever your pattern is that is limiting you, that pattern will most likely come up. It will most likely be magnified, and many times people actually want to run because it's the same thing that has plagued them, except now it seems 10 times worse or 100 times worse.
Mm.
And so they want to bolt. And a lot of it are things that would be unconscious. So as they come into consciousness, you know, blind spots that we have, that can be pretty painful. Those are the moments I live for, because I've been in this work now for 25 years. I live for those moments where I go, wow, I never realized I've been doing that my whole life, that I actually have had this preconceived notion of such and such or myself. So as these things come up and we meet them and we keep moving through the container of the workshop, they tend to get transmuted. So what that means is that the energy that was being held becomes free for us to use.
Mm.
So in contrast to, you know, people who have been converted to Christianity, which many of the kahuna here were, instead of taking something away, like taking my fear away, taking my anger away, like getting rid of stuff or releasing stuff, even in many New Age philosophies, we want to release things or let them go or take them out of our lives. We don't want to do that here. What we want to do is allow everything to rise and then to become free. So that, because when you think of it, anything that's happened to us, death cannot have not happened.
Mm-hmm.
And any anger or sadness or fear or guilt we have is still part of us. It's not separate from us. Kahu would call it a member of your family. So if we're going to think that we're actually going to take that part of us and toss it away, toss that memory out or get rid of it, okay, I don't have that anymore, I don't have that experience plaguing me anymore, we will always have the experiences that we've had. However, how we meet them, how we are able to allow them to awaken in our system as energy rather than as trauma, this is a possibility. And that means that becomes free, and that becomes a contributing factor now to our lives, whereas before that trauma might have been something that held us back. It now becomes something that helps to move us forward in life.
Mm.
So that's all extremely a deep process. And it comes up in different ways for different people. And but the, you know, Kahu called the work essentially raising your internal speed. I don't know if I talked about that in the last interview. And what I've come to recognize that as at this point anyway is the speed at which we meet our own life force, the speed at which we communicate with our own life force, so that hopefully one day or more and more, let's say, because we're dealing with infinity, our default setting as to how we respond to the world and to ourselves and to the possibilities and to the moment, the default setting becomes that life force.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of me coming from my tiny mind, which has maybe, you know, still shards of trauma or fear, or instead of like instantly responding from my tiny mind, which will always have more stuff to be unfolded, I can respond from my life force, from my spirit force, I call it.
Right.
From my essence, more or less. Yeah. So it's a chance to embody your spirituality. So any, you know, just also those huge experiences that you've had or some of your meditators have had in meditation, and then when we go into the world and get discombobulated perhaps by other people who aren't in that zone, that to me, there's a little bit of a disconnect there, because the spirituality, that big huge experience that we had, isn't embodied. But when that experience is consciously moving through every cellular process, or you're aware that is, you include that part of you, then your spirituality becomes embodied, and you're much more able to hold and be vertically aligned with your own resonant field, no matter what's happening around you.
Right, right. And I'm assuming that when are the March retreat dates?
I'm extending the March one to seven. I'm trying to create more 7-day retreats, as I'm finding six is a bit tight. It's March 4th to the 10th, and it'll be in Maui.
March 4th to the 10th. So I'm assuming, you know, because I will be there, that a lot of this work that you're talking about, you know, as you're saying, the patterns, you know, whichever are the patterns that are sort of currently inhibiting your life force will rise to the surface, that mm-hmm. that occurs as a result of the massage, that the body work is the medium through which these patterns are revealing themselves.
Actually, in the workshops, it's really not a lot about the body work.
Okay.
So we work with our own bodies first and foremost, in different movement meditations, different ways of approaching the body, certain dance-like movements, ancient dance movements. So one particular movement, which is kind of a foundation of the work, is something called Ka'alele'au, and that in the translation to English is called flying.
Mm.
And flying has all of the body moving in the shape of infinity. So the head, the shoulders, the arms, the rib cage, the hips, the feet are all marking from many different angles and dimensions, from the top, from the side, from the front and back. You're making different shapes of the infinite. And so as your embodiment steps into that infinite motion, anything that's not in alignment with infinity, not with your essence and your life force, comes up to the surface on many different levels. And so that's when we get a chance to embody them, to transmute them. So it's quite a physical training.
Mm-hmm.
It has you working with your own body mostly. Sometimes we do to greater or lesser degrees body work. So the body work is just one of the tools that ends up happening in the workshop. For body workers, it's really helpful because they basically get a surprise of, you know, a deeper spiritual foundation from which to approach their work.
Right.
But it also has them raising their internal speed and being able to address the different aspects of themselves and the body in different ways. So if you're a body worker, you will come away with a skill, let's say. But if you're not a body worker, and many people who take the retreats are not body workers, you'll come away with an opening to a whole new way of perceiving yourself and the world, your own body, starting with your own body, starting with your own experiences, your own life force. So body work, yes, it is. We will get there, but it's not the primary focus. And yet, if you did want to come and just learn the body work, all the foundational stuff would be absolutely necessary, because it's really a state of being and a transmission that's coming through you that needs to be in operation, or it needs to be open for you to perform that particular type of body work. Yeah.
That rings true to my experience of having, you know, that massage from you, because it felt like a transmission.
Mm-hmm.
And so the closest I could kind of compare it to is when I've been in the presence of spiritual teachers, and you become aware that there's something is being transmitted that doesn't have to do with, you know, it could be in silence or it could be through words, but it doesn't really have to do with anything intellectual. And
right.
And so it's the embodiment of a certain presence that then permeate, you know, I felt there was a presence in that room that was permeating my body, and then my body was resonating with the same presence. So it makes sense to me that this would be primarily about the sort of state of consciousness or the state of being,
yeah,
that within which that exchange can take place.
Right. That state of being is also has become paramount for me in my life. So,
mm-hmm.
They're interchangeable and completely the same thing. And so Kahu would say that this work is every moment of your life.
Right, right.
And that's what it is, because it's not a case of rushing around, you know, doing our thing and whatever, and then when it's time for a session, oh, I have to get all quiet and like, you know, make everything nice and be calm and like tune in. The idea is that you are all of you in this transformative field of your own life force,
right?
In every moment, as much as possible. And of course, we always have the next place to go with that, and the next, you know, level to open to. But the main thing is that you're here, and you're open, and you're willing for
right.
that to happen.
And similarly, when I teach meditation, I often will say to people, you're not going to be a different person when you're meditating than you are the rest of the time. You know, the meditative experience is unique because you're sitting and meditating, but however you are in life is how you're going to be when you're meditating, because that's who you are. And so
Absolutely.
In the end, like you said, it already always is a life. It is always your whole life.
Yeah.
Jody, I am so happy to have the chance to talk to you again.
Thank you, Jeff.
I am so excited to see you in March, the 4th to the 10th, and I am hoping that some of the people listening will want to join you as well and join me in an adventure that I, you know, I really feel blessed to have found this work when I did. And so I will look forward to seeing you in just a few months.
Jeff, thanks so much. It's been just such a joy connecting with you and speaking with you, and I'm really grateful for your depth of presence and your questions and helping us to explore, and me to explore more of what this work is. So thank you, and I look forward to seeing you.
Great. Thank you so much.